outlined against a blue gray sky, the horsemen ride again. Yes, Grandland sees the Irish shine, their time has come to win. In the polo grounds the spirits stir, and you feel a shiver when the horsemen herd comes thundering by, and the Irish rise again.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Down the Line on the TNNDN Network. Excited as we are another week closer to Irish football season, everyone. Everyone go crazy, folks. Tim Daniel here, excited for a show this week. We don't have Mr. Stephen Herring with us, but we do have the godfather of the new Dindy Nation with us. He is Mr. Jason Crepe.
What's up, folks? Glad to be here again on another Wednesday night, bringing you guys all the news and talk about Notre Dame. And, buddy, man, we got some stuff to talk about, don't we?
Oh, do we have some stuff to talk about. So, on that stuff to talk about, I'll let you know what's coming up on today's show. We are going to discuss, of course, the unfortunate news that is the injuries that have come out this week and touch on that in our thoughts. Give our opinions there and how we feel this affects the season, the team going into the season. We also will be joined by Ryan Altolo of the Austin American Sportsman. So for this week's Know Your Enemy segment, we got back-to-back Texas guys to touch on there. So I pre-recorded an interview with him last week before everything happened, so we don't touch on the situation there at all. So all that, a whole lot more, and let's go ahead and get to it, man. Things aren't too hot there in South Bend for the Notre Dame football team as they go through 6 arrests this week. You know, there's a saying of boys will be boys, but this is farther more than boys will be boys in this circumstance here. Max Redfield and co. being Tavon Coney and, holy moly, I lost the list of the names. Here there is.
White.
Dexter Williams, Kevin Stevenson, and Ashton White were arrested Friday night when a trooper pulled them over for going 35 for speeding. And then as soon as the car was pulled over, he smelled marijuana. They had found a dog. They found a handgun in there. And if you don't know how the law works in the state of Indiana, if you have a gun in your car in the state of Indiana, everybody has that gun in their car in the state of Indiana if they are up inside the vehicle. So, Jason, man.
I was going to say, that is to say, now, from what we're understanding, that handgun wasn't stolen. It was somebody. Mm-hmm. Now, in the state of Indiana, you can travel with a firearm, a handgun, in your vehicle if you don't have a license to carry it. However, the handgun has to be unloaded and in the front, and the clip with the ammo has to be in the back, where you can't just grab them both at the same time or vice versa. So obviously that wasn't the case, but yeah, in Indiana, that's not something to play with. That's a bad idea.
Nope. And that led to, and then there's Devin Butler, who decided to have a good time at linebackers, which, come on, if you're in the South Bend area, we're all guilty once or twice of having a good night at linebackers. But this is way too far in this circumstance. So the report comes out, and I'm kind of paraphrasing what I read. He got an altercation with a female. He shoved her and swung at a cop. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's, I think there's a little more to it now, and I'm actually trying to get confirmation on something that I heard earlier on one of the local sports channels in the South Bend area. I'm not going to say what I heard, but I want to confirm what I heard, because it's probably irrelevant, but it's kind of a twist. But yeah, what they're saying is that there was an altercation between Butler's girlfriend and a Notre Dame student and another female, and some stuff went down, and he shoved her, and then apparently shoved him and then lifted him up and tackled him and lit him up in the ribs 5 or 6 times, and they had to tase him to get him down. And that is definitely, I think it's a level 6 felony in Indiana.
Which he pled not guilty to.
Yes, he did plead not guilty to that today. He had no comment coming in or out of the courthouse.
All right. So, what are the results that comes from this with Brian Kelly's staff? Butler suspended indefinitely, so he's still a part of the program. The other gentlemen that aren't Max Redfield are still awaiting their decision of what's going to happen with them. And then, of course, Max Redfield is, in fact, kicked off the team, which led to a lot of people I heard saying, well, why is Max Redfield kicked off the team and no one else is? Well, apparently this isn't the first issue Redfield has had since he's been a member of the program. It looks like, if you remember back in January when they were in Arizona for the Fiesta Bowl, he was actually sent home. Yeah. Yep. I think it was sent home, like, wasn't it the night before the game?
Night before the game for violation of team rules.
Yeah, so...
we never got any clarification on what that rule was, but yeah.
So, so this is another issue with Al Redfield. So, you know, on and off the field, Redfield has been a little... I mean, it's been very disappointing. It's a guy that, you know, had such high expectations coming into the program. A guy was expected to do big things. So, yeah, this definitely hurts for that circumstance, and it's definitely not easy to deal with. But it's, you know, this isn't even football-related at this point. We just hope the best for these, the students and their families. And it's obviously a terrible situation. It sucks to see happen, especially to young kids with a lot of potential who have a privilege to be at a major university and be, you know, and do, you know, do great things, because a Notre Dame degree can get you just about anything you need in the world. But what the hell? Like, that's...
Well,
yeah.
You know what, and kind of something I'm taking away from it is, to me, okay, two of the guys, Devin Butler and Max Redfield, both seniors, right?
Right.
And then something like this happens. I mean, to me, and folks, we are positive here. We love Notre Dame. We're the biggest Notre Dame fans ever. But at the same time, we've got to say what we got to say because we do a podcast. And
right.
This is what we do. Now, not to be negative at all, but to me, doesn't it almost feel like a leadership void? I mean, years past, let's say last year, Jalen Smith, he was a leader, and Joe Schmidt. But this year, they're just... doesn't really seem to be a leader, and maybe that's showing now. I mean, six arrests in within the span of, what, 3 or 4 hours?
Yeah, well...
So do we have a leadership void here? Or, you know, that's what I really took away from it, just as analyzing the program.
I wouldn't say leadership problem, because I think you can really trust in a guy like Isaac Rochelle, a guy like Mike McGlinchey, who both were named captains today, just came out not too long ago. I think, you know, it was some college kids that did some dumb things, and they went a little too far with their dumb things, and there's the pictures coming out of the guy on Facebook that's apparently hanging out with him that night where they're all at his house, and, like, he's got pictures with all the guys, and he's got on his Facebook, and so there's that detail that's out there. Like, it's a lot of shit, man, and it sucks, obviously, because you want these kids to go in there and, you know, meet the expectations and go and do wonderful things and get a degree at Notre Dame and set themselves up for life, and then things like this happen. And I mean, I can understand where you're coming from and thinking that, but I really don't believe that's the case. Especially a guy like Devon Cotton-Coney, who was, you know, combined at the hip last year with Jalen Smith. If you go back and watch a season with, he was with him quite a bit there. You know, Dexter Williams has a very wise college veteran in Tarian Fulston at his position with him. Torrey Hunter has been through the ups and downs, who also is named a captain. Him and James Onawala were the other two captains announced today. So, yeah, I don't think it's a leadership void. I think it was just some kids that got themselves in a little too much trouble, more trouble than they could handle.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And actually, I'm sitting here looking at the depth chart right now. Now, of those six players, guess how many of them were seniors?
Two.
Of all of them. And how many were under junior?
Two.
All of them. Sophomore, and junior. Now, those are kids. Now, a 21, 22-year-old, I don't know. It just frustrates me, I guess, as a fan to go, you know what, Devin, actually great potential this year. Max, he's had his issues. We'll never know. But those two men just threw away possibly their future and a very great livelihood by probably not getting a degree now from Notre Dame. That's just the frustrating part.
My frustration is this. You're a Notre Dame football player, and you are in South Bend, Indiana.
Yep.
You don't think someone's going to give you a ride? You don't think someone's going to, like, help you out in that circumstance with those guys? Like, hey, we, you know, someone's not going to, like, be like, hey, we'll take care of this. Like, no one's going to be, like, there to have your back. No. That's, I mean, come on. How did it be when Tommy Reese got his got arrested and were like, dude, I would have picked him up?
Oh, well, yeah. If I knew one of those guys, yeah, Tommy Reese, hey, dude, I'm hiding in the bush. Come grab. But still, you can't advocate that. But I do give Brian Kelly a lot of credit.
Tons of credit.
If this had been any number of SEC teams, and we're not going to call them out, or you can throw up 30 programs in the air right now, and any of those programs would have covered this up. Brian Kelly took the appropriate steps, got in front of this. Now, the other four guys, I would venture to say, and I have no inside knowledge, but I bet they're probably going to get off pretty easy and they're not going to be charged with felonies. If you get charged with a felony and you're a Notre Dame student, you're out. That's how it goes. So I don't think that, I think those four underclassmen are going to stay around, but still, let's just hope everyone learns from this, guys. I know everyone says they're kids, but at the same time, you think before you act for 3 seconds, and that can be the biggest 3 seconds of your life.
Well, yeah. I mean, Notre Dame has always talked the talk on discipline, and I mean, it kind of forced their own hand here. But yeah, I agree. The fact that Brian Kelly didn't wait for the school, he didn't wait for the jurisdictions, for the jury system, for the state system. And just flat out said, like, no, this is how it's going to be. Which makes you think that there might have been a few more things potentially with Redfield that, not exactly law issues, but just stuff like around the team that like could cause this. Because obviously this is a terrible situation where get anyone kicked off in first offense. But there was no waiting. There was no, like, he was like, all right, I've had enough. I'm done.
Well, we already know that there's been, well, we know of, like you mentioned earlier, the last season with the bowl game, he was sent home early. So obviously, if you take that and the arrest, you kind of go, okay, that could indicate a pattern. Really anything that would come out in public, but now it's like, okay, this is twice in a year you've embarrassed our football team. Later, you're done.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, it's such a fortunate situation, like you said, but we hope for the best. I was going to reiterate here and kind of backtrack. This is Down the Line on the TNNDN Network with Tim Daniel and Jason Crepe, as Steve Herring is out enjoying a wonderful family vacation before we get the kick into full gear here in about a week and a half before the season starts. So, as you know, we said last week, we're starting a new segment this season called Know Your Enemy. It's a Notre Dame segment where I'm going to try to interview beat writers from other universities and other opponents of Notre Dame this year. Last week we had Westcott Eberts of Burnt Orange Nation come on, talk a little Texas. But hey, we got some time, so I went ahead and did another Texas interview there. And I'm interviewing Ryan Altolo. Ryan is a writer for the Austin American Statesman, and that is a website where he covers UT football. And he also works for Hook'em.com. Ryan's been there in Texas for a couple years now, as he discusses. So he touches on a little bit of information there as far as talking about the Baylor situation, how much that's affected Texas, what he thinks about Notre Dame going forward into this game, and a few more things there. So without further ado, this is Know Your Enemy, Texas, with Ryan Altolo of the Austin American Statesman. And this week's segment of Know Your Enemy on Down the Line on the TNNDN Network, as we get ready for week one in Austin against the Texas Longhorns. I had to bring on a guy from the Austin American Statesman and Hook'em.com. This is Mr. Ryan Altolo. Ryan, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us today.
Happy to be on. Thanks, Tim.
Awesome. So, Ryan, to hop right into it, man, the big story for Texas this offseason has definitely been actually in the Big 12 in general, has been the case of Baylor and everything that's happening there. And we're seeing some of those Baylor players go to Texas. We're seeing some of those guys leave the state in general, leave the conference in general. How much has the situation at Baylor benefited Charlie Strong and the team?
A great deal. And Charlie Strong told us coming into camp here that after spring ball, he told his staff, I need a kicker, I need a couple of linemen, and I need a slot receiver. Well, in Baylor, he got two offensive linemen and a slot receiver, and then a little later, he got a kicker graduate transfer from LSU. So he checked off all four of those boxes, three of them from Baylor. And these are studs, too. You know, Patrick Hudson and Devin Duvernay, Hudson being an offensive lineman, Duvernay being a wide receiver, are two of the top three rated players in Texas's class. And they're basically free players that they were not expecting to get. They just kind of landed in their laps well after signing day. So it's a big deal. And I think, you know, you're going to see maybe not all four of the guys, but two, three of them really contribute and be on that field against Notre Dame.
And, you know, that's a huge thing there because we're talking about a lot of transition there. And obviously you bring up, you know, week one being the big thing. Us as Notre Dame fans who, you know, aren't in your situation where you're seeing what Texas is doing and the players they're bringing in and the talent they're making down there, are we ready to say it's going to be night and day from the team that came into Notre Dame Stadium next year, this week?
Night and day, no. It will be better. If for no other reason than they were so bad that day, they better be better. And a lot of the young pups that were playing in the opener last year now have 12 games or thereabouts under their belts. So it's a more experienced team. I think there's certainly more staff continuity. Of course, after that debacle in South Bend, Charlie Strong demoted his offensive play caller and demoted his quarterback. And now they have really a real spurt offense kind of bred in the Art Briles mold of up-tempo, veer and shoot, really aggressive tempo, and they didn't have that last year. They pretended to, but they never did. So it'll be a better team. How much better? I don't know. I don't think expectations are crazy high, and if you are reading crazy high expectations for Texas, you need to be reading somebody else. They're not there right now. But they should be a better team, a more organized team, and a more talented team.
We are on with Ryan Altullo of the Hook'em.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Altullo AAS. You mentioned, you know, Texas is in a kind of similar situation to Notre Dame as far as two talented guys under the helm looking for their chance to be the starting quarterback. Notre Dame going through theirs with Zaire and Kaiser. Texas going between Shane. I'm probably going to book it. Is it Buckle? Bushill?
Shane Bushill.
Yep. Awesome. And Tyrone Swoops, two guys who were pretty talented guys, two guys who are highly talented players. And we know Charlie Strong is keeping it in the dark as far as who's going to be the guy so far. What do you see from these two? You know, is there one you feel has a more of an advantage than the other? Is there something where you see that possibly where both could be on the field? How do you feel about it?
Well, here's the thing. Tyrone Swoops is a senior who I believe is 6-8 as a starter, and he authored that clunker in South Bend last year. Just has not done a whole lot in, you know, his 2 years as a starter. I guess last year he wasn't quite a starter because he got pulled after the Notre Dame game. But so you know what you're getting with him, and it's not very good, frankly. But with Shane Bushill, true freshman who enrolled early, it's kind of that the unknown is, well, tastier than the known if the known is not very tasty. So I think they end up turning to Shane Bushill. I think that he's going to take some licks. That's not the opener that you want a true freshman to break in at. But he's more accurate of the two. I think he has better presence, better leadership qualities of the two, even as a true freshman compared to the senior Swoops. And, you know, I think if you're Charlie Strong and you're going into a make-or-break year, you'd rather go 7-5 with a freshman quarterback than 7-5 with a senior quarterback, because you go 7-5 with that freshman quarterback, you could say, okay, we're building towards something. But I don't know if that enters his mind. It would me if I was on the hot seat with a job that pays me $5 million a year. But I think you got to turn the page to the new guy and just let him take some lumps and see how good he can get by the end of the year, because you know what Swoops is, and it's not good enough. It hasn't been good enough the past couple of years.
Well, how does Gerard Hurd play in this? I know he's made the transition to wide receiver. He's kind of doing the Texas Braxton Miller route this season. But sure. I saw you posted in an article, you said that he's still getting some reps at quarterback. Is that a better safe than sorry, or is that a Charlie Strong still keeping him in the back of his mind as a potential quarterback for this team?
Well, he's out of the running for the starting quarterback. Otherwise, he'd be getting first-team reps and would not be screwing around with the receiver. So he's out of it. I think they're just keeping him warm in case one of the top two guys gets hurt, and then they elevate him to backup quarterback. But I don't see any way that he is the starter for Notre Dame. I think that this transition to receiver is real. I think it's permanent. I think you may see him behind center in some wildcat type stuff. You might as well, because he's a great athlete and he can run. And you know, he rolled up for 527 yards or whatever it was against Cal combined yards last year, running and passing. So you know, he can do it. But you know, as far as being the guy QB1, that's not happening this year.
We have Ryan Altullo here from the Austin American Statesman and Hook'em.com. Check him out on Twitter, Altullo, AAS. So on the other side of it, there's a Notre Dame team who was very good last year, who was very good when they were unhealthy even, had a lot of injuries, including the Texas game, losing starting running back Torian Folston. Still went on to have a 10-win year. They have two talented quarterbacks, but they did lose a lot of players to the draft. So when you look at this Notre Dame team from the outside looking in, where do you feel Texas will compete best with them?
Well, it's a good question. I think Texas should have improved line play, offensive line play this year. I know Notre Dame's lost a couple guys on the defensive front, right?
Yes.
Last year, that was just a complete mismatch. That was the biggest mismatch of the day, is Texas's offensive line just couldn't block anybody. They're going to be better this year. There's two running backs that I think probably make a top 10 tandem in the country, possibly. Nobody's talking about them, but Deontay Foreman, who really was kind of under the radar for that Notre Dame game last year, didn't do a whole lot. And then Chris Warren, if you recall, his father played for the Seahawks, the Cowboys, all-pro running back in the day. Those two are big 250-pound backs that can really run, and once they get up to speed, they're pretty fast even for their size. So that's what Texas wants to do. You know, you hear about the spread-up tempo offense, and you think a bunch of bombs down the field. Those will come, but it's all going to start with in the trenches with a power run game. And I think whether it's, you know, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Baylor, anybody that's on Texas' schedule, when you can establish a run game, you got a chance. And I think that's their clearest path to success in the opener.
Yeah, I think I saw that Feinbaum posted something where someone on ESPN has their like schedule predictor, and they actually gave Texas a 54% chance of beating Notre Dame, but that was as of July. Do you feel like that's good odds? Do you feel like it's going to be, you know, like you said, you don't feel like they're going to be night and day, but you still feel like they'll be more competitive?
Yeah, you know, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around reversing a 38-3 decision from last year.
Right.
Winning that game. That takes a little bit of imagination, but yeah, they're going to be competitive. They're at home this time. They're bigger and stronger in the trenches, which is always helpful, but they're really young. You know, their defensive line is probably not going to be great. They're relying on true freshmen to play defensive tackle, and those guys just might get overwhelmed physically. They're big for their age, but, you know, this is college football, and they just might get beat up, especially early on. And, it's tough to say in those openers, but Notre Dame under Brian Kelly has recruited well. You know, Brian Kelly's in what, his eighth year now? Seventh year?
Seventh, yeah.
seventh, so he's way ahead of Charlie Strong, who's in his third in terms of building the program. So, you know, Notre Dame lost a lot, but they didn't stop recruiting. And, right now you would have to go with the Irish as the favorite. But Vegas has Notre Dame as a slim favorite, 4 points, 4.5 points. And, if you're Texas, you think you're right there. And maybe they are. But there's too many unknowns for me right now with Texas to start calling upsets.
So, two more questions before I get you out of here. And again, thanks for your time. I really do appreciate it. The first one being, we've gotten the chance to talk about how big this game is for Notre Dame, that it's Sunday night under the lights. It's the only college game on that night. It's a primetime game on ABC. And it's a team that's trying to take back their home state, a team that saw A&M be successful, that saw Baylor be successful, that's seen Texas Tech score 160 points a game, it feels like, sometimes, running a fast-break offense. How big is this game for Texas for their recruiting future?
Well, I think it's really big because Charlie has signed top 10 classes each of the past 2 years, or borderline top 10 classes, depending what service you look at. So recruiting has not been his issue. It's been the stuff that happens between September and December, frankly. So, but what he's been able to do the past 2 years is sell hope and say, guys, we're going to flip this, we're going to turn it around, just sign on the dotted line with us, and it's worked. But you can't keep selling hope. Eventually, you have to sell results, you have to sell big wins, you have to sell momentum. And if they go out and get drubbed by Notre Dame, all these big studs in the state who are just waiting to see what happens this year, and they are. They've told me, I was out at the opening, you know, we like Texas, we're interested, but we need to see it with our own eyes. And if they go get smothered by Notre Dame, that won't be good. But on the flip side, if they go even play a competitive game against Notre Dame and look like they are organized and, you know, looks like the young talent is playing well, you know, guys that their recruits will get to play 2 and 3 years with in college, you know, then I think it's very beneficial. But there's so many moving parts. You know, there's 12 games, and most people think that Charlie's probably at the minimum got to win 7 of them to keep his job. You know, 6 and 6 won't be enough. So they do get blown out by Notre Dame, they still got a chance to salvage a season. Even if they beat Notre Dame, they still have a chance of, you know, watching the season come unraveled. So it's going to be a really interesting season, a huge season for the program, for the state of the University of Texas football program, and for Charlie Strong. And if they win, the recruits will come because he's already getting them without winning. Just watch what he does if they do.
Which leads me to my last question, which you've already touched on a little bit in this interview. A lot of people, looks like you yourself have made mention to it, feel this is a make or break year for Charlie Strong. And a year in a program since he's been there has had a lot of transition as far as him taking, you know, the bad attitude out of the team, the guys that he didn't feel fit in for his team, and bringing his guys in. How much more patient will Texas be if, say, he goes 8-4 this year with a bowl win?
Oh, I think they would be thrilled because that would get them to 9-4 then.
Yes,
and that's contract extension territory right there. They'd be thrilled with that. I think expectations are realistic. They need to be. You know, some fans think they should be winning 10 games every year, but that's just the lunatics in any team's fan base. But the administration here gets what's going on. You know, without getting too much in the weeds, Charlie in his first year inherited some pretty good talent, especially on defense. But in the first game, they played North Texas, and they lost their center, who was the most proven offensive lineman, and their quarterback. And all of a sudden, that was probably the two guys you just could not lose. And they ended up going 6-7 that year with talent that, had it stayed healthy, is good enough to win 9 games. They win 9 games that year. He's not on the hot seat right now. No. But then they had to rebuild. That began the rebuild. Mac Brown did not recruit well at the end of his tenure. There's no question about that. And Charlie is now trying to play with freshmen and sophomores this year instead of juniors and seniors, because frankly the juniors and seniors aren't as good as the freshmen and sophomores. And in college basketball, that's okay. You can win with young guys. For college football, a physical game, It's worn in the trenches, on the line. You know, veterans win. Juniors and seniors win games. So I think people get it. The administration gets it. But, you know, you got to see progress as well. You can't keep selling hope. Like I said before, you got to see some wins. You know, they got blown out last year 50-7 at TCU. They lost 24-0 at Iowa State. They lost 38-3 at Notre Dame. Those are inexcusable margins. You know, it's one thing to lose. It's another thing to just get blown out and not be competitive. If they do that type of stuff and continue to get blown out, especially by bad teams like Iowa State, then he's going to be fired. There's no question. But, you know, if we see progress, especially if they play a freshman quarterback, there's no reason to make a change if he is building something and showing momentum with young guys, because you might as well let him coach his recruits than let somebody else bring somebody else in to coach them if he's already getting it done with them.
Yeah, I'm with you there. So, Ryan, thanks for your time, man. You went a little longer than I asked for you, so I certainly appreciate that. Before we get you out of here, go ahead and give a shout-out to the websites that everyone can find your writing, also on Twitter if they want to interact with you come week one. The floor is yours.
Yeah, my stuff can be found at the Austin American Statesman. Our site is statesman.com, and our Texas football-devoted website is hook'em.com. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Tulo, A-A-S. That's A-U-T-U-L-L-O-A-A-S.
Awesome. Thanks for that, man. So as a Kevin Durant guy, I assume, from his time in Texas, are you a Warriors fan now?
Well, you know, I've only been in Texas for 2 years.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not a Warriors fan. I moved here from Ohio, so I'm a Cavs fan. And I got a lot of respect for the Warriors. They're a heck of a team, and it took everything the Cavs had to beat them in the finals. But, you know, I think there's some people that are disappointed that Kevin left, especially Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a lot of Texas fans who realize that Oklahoma City fans are also Oklahoma Sooner fans, and they don't care how they feel. You know, so, but it'll be interesting to watch what that team does that's assembled in the Bay Area, because there's certainly maybe the most talented team ever assembled.
That's true. Well, Ryan, thanks again, man. All the best, and I look forward to keeping in touch soon.
Thanks for having me on, Tip.
Have a good one. All right, and that was Ryan Altolo, the Austin American Statesman, talking a little Texas football with us and getting us ready for week one. Thank you again, Ryan, for joining us, and we're getting a rep there. So if you ever want to see his work, go to statesman.com or hook'em.com. He'll be all over those two sites there. So now that we've gotten that far ahead, Jason, let's go ahead and discuss the after effects of this on the gridiron. So how this team is affected on the football field. Obviously, Max Redfield is the biggest one to talk about there, because the safety position is very important in a Van Gorder defense. It's the most important position in the Van Gorder defense.
Yeah.
So now we have a couple freshmen at the top of the depth chart, including Devin Sudstill, who is a guy that a lot of people are stoked about, myself included.
Yep.
He has been jumping off since, I believe he was an early enrollee, if I'm not mistaken, and he has jumped off the practice field as far as like about being an attraction and doing big things since he's stepped foot on campus. So we know we have Devin there. The cornerback position, Sean Crawford looks like he's going to get a little bump up here, and he's going to get his chance. A guy that we're really excited for here, a guy who suffered an injury his freshman year, so he's going to get a chance to play for the next 4 years in Notre Dame, if he chooses, of course, and do some excellent things there. On the running back side of it, with Dexter Williams, we already knew that Torian Folsom and Josh Adams were going to be the guys. So now some other guys are going to get a chance to step up there. So overall, there are losses to depth, and Brian Kelly's but at the same time, Brian Kelly has done such an amazing job of building depth these last 4 or 5 years. So if something like this does happen, guys are able to step up and play and do big things for them. So now that this is being said, when you look at the depth chart now, and you're going to see a lot of younger guys on there as everything's going on. What do you feel, and how do you feel about what's coming, what's going forward?
Well, if you look at the right cornerback position, now I got to say this before I say anything else. I pulled up the depth chart before we went on air. Max Redfield is not even listed on the depth chart as a strong safety or a free safety or anything. He's gone. So I just thought that was like, yeah.
There was no wasting time.
Yeah, no. But right cornerback, you've got Cole Luke, who's a senior, but he's at the top. You got Devontae Vaughn, who's actually number two on the depth chart.
Mm-hmm.
And Ashton White, who could be a scratch or maybe just have to sit out a year. We don't know. Sophomore. Tony Pride Jr., a freshman, now takes over the third on the depth chart. And actually, Devin Butler was fifth on the depth chart for the right cornerback position. Weak side linebacker, Kayvon Coney, again, I don't think he's going to go anywhere, but he may not see any time this season. But Greer Martinez, Belial, who's a sophomore, and Jameer Jones, who's a freshman, who seems to be promising from what I'm hearing. So, yeah, I mean, it does hurt. Dexter Williams, again, a guy I don't think he was going to go away, but he's probably going to not play this year. This all depends on what the courts say and what the Notre Dame student council, whatever they call it now, they've changed it. So we'll see what happens. Outside receiver, Torrey Hunter Jr. is a senior. Kevin Stefferson, freshman, who's number two on the depth chart, followed by Javon McKinley, another freshman. So it's not, I mean, I guess it's not really that horrible if you think about it, because the two guys we lost are, you know, next man in philosophy, and their backups seem to be pretty darn good. So we'll see what happens, but it's going to be, they're going to have to make some shuffling and get some guys who probably were not getting first-team reps, some first-team reps.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I'm not overtly concerned about, you know, what we're losing in that circumstance here, because I think they're still a very talented football team. I think they still have the right to be called the number 10 team in the country. And I think they still have a lot of leadership. I think they still have a lot of experienced players where they're going to go out there and win football games, and they're going to succeed. I've said before, I expect Texas to be a lot better of a team going into South Bend, but I still expect Notre Dame, I mean, going into the Sunday night season opener, but I still expect Notre Dame to win by 10.
Yeah.
At the least. I think the spread
Yeah.
I think the spread right now is 4.5, if I last I saw. So that could have gone down with the recent news there. I'm not sure.
It probably did.
Yeah. You know, Nevada's an under-the-radar team. A lot of people are talking about could really surprise some people. So, and you know, we all know how much Notre Dame loves scrambling quarterbacks in the era of Van Gorder. So, you know, there's that there. But overall, man, like I said, like they've done such a good job. Wow, if I could talk, of building up talent over the past 4 or 5 years. So in circumstances, exactly, whether it be injury, suspension, leaving the team, whatever, they have people there. And yes, I mean, you're going to lose some experience on the field during this whole circumstance, whatever happens, but you still have a lot of talented kids who know what this opportunity means, and they're going to be able to step up and go do their thing.
Exactly. And I mean, I don't want to, I mean, this really actually, I was kind of not going to say this, but I think I'm going to now, and I don't want anyone to think that it's anything other than what it is. This is speaking to the depth of Notre Dame football. Let's say, for instance, I'm going to take away all six of the players that are in question right now. Forget about them. I'm going to give you six more and see how freaked out you are. Let's say the six were Brandon Wimbush, C.J. Sanders, Durham Smythe, Tristan Hoge, Alex Bars, and Sean Crawford. Would you be any more freaked out or just go, we've got people behind them?
I'd be pretty freaked out.
Well, yeah, I mean, those are bigger names, but still, at the same time, if you look at the depth chart and go, well,
at tight end, there's not really much yet that we can say, because Alizé is going to be out for a season because of suspension.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, bad example.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, otherwise, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, if Wimbush, something happens with Wimbush, you have two guys that are probably going to get drafted at quarterback in the NFL next year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm just, I mean, right. Like I was, that's just speaking to Notre Dame's depth. It's like we've got so much depth at every position that, yeah, there's some you don't want to mess with, but in the grand scheme of things, what happened this past weekend, it's not the be-all, end-all of the 2016 Notre Dame football season by any means.
It's all over. They can't come back.
Oh. I have heard, and I'm sure you have on social media, people are who claim to be diehard fans. I'm ashamed to be a diehard Notre Dame fan right now. It's like, well, then shut up.
Yeah, go root for Alabama because it's much better there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think I saw someone said it was actually kind of, it's not funny, but it was funny, one of those things. So someone said, I give Brian Kelly props for what he did, because if this were Baylor, they'd be suspended a drive.
Well, if it was any major, and I hate to say that, but it's true. That's the track record of big, huge, like SEC type teams. Some, you know, you never find out about the bad stuff until after the season's over.
Well, shit, if this were
covered
the NFL,
up, covered up.
If this were the NFL, they'd be suspended 3 games.
Yeah. That's true.
Right, Le'Veon Bell?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah. So, let's talk about some happier things, man, because as we know, we can wrap up the show with this here. As we know, when Notre Dame guys leave, they go on to bigger and better things. And they go
indeed.
And succeed, and they make things happen. Well, some of our guys are out there making things happen at the next level of football.
Yes, they are.
If you read Pro Football Focus like I do, because I'm a nerd and I love football way too much, you will see that they did a list so far for 2 weeks of the NFL's preseason of the 40 top-rated rookies so far that have been graded on their system. They have a very tough grading system. And on that list, at number one, is Mathias Farley.
Nice.
Ronnie Stanley in the top five.
Sweet.
Who else is on there? Romeo Quara. Romeo! I'm just going to say... I'm just going to say that Romeo was on our show before the draft, so I think we had something to do with that.
Boom.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, there's that.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know if Will Fuller made the list or not, per se, but he's had a really good preseason in Houston. A lot of people love him out of camp, and obviously we expect nothing but big things from that guy in the next level because of his playmaking ability and his speed. So, want to give our shout-outs to the Notre Dame grads doing their thing at the next level. And let you guys know we're following and we appreciate everything you're doing and we can't wait to see you guys succeed on Sundays.
Absolutely. Oh, and hey, before we wrap this up, man, I think we've got a new listener actually. Buddy of mine from that one of my accounts that I deal with, his name's Brian, and he's a University of Michigan fan.
Oh.
And he wants to listen to the show, so I thought we'd welcome him in and, you know, say, hey, Michigan sucks, dude. So, go away.
We're still mad you guys got that sweet Jordan deal, but, yeah.
Jerk.
Right. But it's cool because we got Under Armour, and our Under Armour stuff's pretty dope.
Yeah, that's true. No, I'm just kidding, Brian. You're all good, dude.
Yeah. So, yeah. Another thing we want to touch on, we've heard some rumblings of, where in the world can we find Down the Line anymore? But never fear, folks. We are still on Blog Talk Radio by searching TNNDN Radio. We are also still on iTunes, where you can find us there by searching TNNDN. So we're going to be all over the place this year, people. We don't have much longer to go. The season is on its way. So with that being said, we will go ahead and close out this week's edition of Down the Line on the TNNDN Network. Major thanks to Ryan Altolo for joining us this week. Major thanks to everyone out there who continues to listen through all the years. We're not too far away, folks. Where next week we'll be doing a game preview of Texas. Holy moly.
Oh, yeah.
We can talk football game. Cannot wait.
About time.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
I know. Quit talking about it. I'm getting excited. Stop it.
So in that case, everyone, enjoy your week. Have a good one out there, and go Irish.
Go Irish.
Outlined against a blue gray sky, the horsemen ride again. Yes, Grandland sees the Irish shine, their time has come to win. In the polo grounds, the spirits stir, and you feel a shiver when the horsemen herd comes thundering by, and the Irish rise again.